Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. My name is Em and today I'll be speaking with Danny. After being diagnosed with primary breast cancer, Danny's treatment caused her to experience an early menopause. After finding ways to cope with this herself, she set up a business to help other people going through the same thing. Danny, thank you for joining me.
Hi, Em.
So, Danny, do you mind if we could just begin by telling us a little bit about your diagnosis? So when were you diagnosed and what was it that initially prompted you to get checked?
Yeah, sure. I was having a grope in my armpit, like you do, watching the television, not thinking anything of it. And there it was, a really, to me, it felt like a big cherry-sized round tumour. And it came out of the nowhere. And even when I lifted my arm, you could almost see it sticking out of my skin. But I don't know how I'd not seen it or noticed it. Anyway, it was breast cancer. I was 33 at that time. I had three little daughters. My twins were two. My eldest daughter was four. And initially, it looked okay on the mammogram. It looked like a fibroadenoid. And I was sort of told, you're quite young, maybe not to worry about it. But I went back after Christmas, and it turned out to be a highly aggressive type of breast cancer. Mm. And after then, I can't really remember everything so clearly. It was almost like life was happening to us as a family. And I was on that treadmill, and I couldn't step off. That's the best way to describe it. And initially it was surgery first for me, chemotherapy, radiotherapy after.
Wow. I mean, yeah, when you that metaphor of kind of being on the treadmill is definitely something that I've heard before. And yeah, life just sort of happens to you. It's not something that you kind of have any choice in moving through it. It just sort of comes at you. And I believe you also found out later on that you had the mutated BRCA1 gene.
Yeah, so when the doctor then said, oh, the type of cancer you've had and your age, is there a family history? And I said, yes, there is, but it's not to worry about it because it's on my dad's side. And I could see the eyebrows lifting. And so for all this time until I was 33, I thought, because we had so many women on my dad's side of the family die very early from ovarian cancer. But I thought, because if it was on my dad's side, and no GPs ever sort of said it, you know, you tell them family medical history, but no one's really put the two and two together and saying that I was at risk as well. But it turned out I was a BRCA1 carrier, which obviously meant that that is why I had breast cancer so early, or it increased my risks of breast cancer. And so I then had to make more decisions of what I was going to do, because I was told the BRCA1 gene quite likes to give you more cancers, whether they're breast cancers or ovarian cancers. And I thought, oh gosh, I've already had the one cancer, I can't be doing with more. But the decision-making process was months and years. It wasn't something that just happened. So initially I was diagnosed, I had to deal with that. But I wasn't out of dealing with my first cancer diagnosis, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, there were times when I was first diagnosed where my dad and my husband, believe it or not, I was a grown woman, were talking to my oncologist, and I was sitting on the sofa on the side because I was so scared. I was so shell-shocked and so traumatized. I almost had to remove myself from conversations. And so I was really not an empowered patient. I really didn't ask the questions I should have asked, because I was just in such a shell-shock trauma. And then years and years went by, and now partly of what I teach when I work with women is how can we move into a more empowered state of being. And for me, that was definitely time. And so the times after my initial diagnosis and treatment, I fell into a really big hole. It was when the world around me was congratulating me about, wow, you've done it, you know, you've passed your chemo, you can look forward to the rest of your life. And inside I was crumbling and crumbling because I was so scared my cancer would come back and I wouldn't see my girls start school. And so I think time is a key factor when we become more empowered sometimes as a patient.
Yeah, I'd love to talk a bit more about that as we get further on to this conversation. But I think something that Yeah, it definitely comes through that. So that kind of, again, it's kind of things are just happening to you. And during that treatment is when you went into early menopause. And I guess because you were kind of maybe not as involved, not as empowered as you wish you had been, had you known what to expect from that? Or were you just kind of blindsided by it?
Well, so I know I went through a state of menopause twice. And the first time I was very much blindsided. So my period stopped when I was having chemo. And I knew it was a side effect. So I'm sure that was mentioned to me. But I didn't know it was meant actually this is a temporary menopause, because the doctors don't really know if your periods are going to come back or not. Now I know this is called temporary menopause. I had all the symptoms. I never knew. I never used the word menopause in any conversation. I just knew period stopped. It's a side effect of chemo. I've got to put up with it. Mm. And I really wanted to show to the outside world that I've got this. I probably looked better going through chemo than now. My hair, my wig, not my hair, but my wig looked good. I wanted to show the world that I had this, that I was this strong super mummy who can go swimming with the kids, be active, do all the things a normal mummy would do. Because I really thought if I showed anyone my weaknesses, that I would be weak. It was like I was pretending to myself. And so, again, I almost wanted to pretend to my doctors. You know, all of my finger and toenails fell off as a side effect of chemotherapy. I didn't even mention those to my doctors. And I'm sure they could have done something about it, because I wanted to show to them as well, I can do this, I've got this. And so another point of the conversations I have now is to actually say to the ladies that I work with or speak to, do say if it bothers you, it needs to bother your doctor. Mm. And it's not a weakness. These are normal side effects to have. There is probably something you can do about it. You don't have to suffer in silence. And you don't have to pretend to the world that you've got all of this. Moving a few years down the line, when I had to make the decision about my ovaries to reduce my risks of further cancers because of the BRCA1 mutation, I was the opposite. I went to lots of different doctors. I knew how to be referred to them within the NHS. I knew how to work the system. You know, just because a hospital said, this is going to be your surgeon, I wasn't having any of it. I did my research. I had the difficult decisions. I became the patient that everyone probably rolled their eyes at one point. But I wanted to be that patient, because I needed to move away from this being on a roller coaster. I have moved into becoming in control of my own healthcare. And my own life was teaching me those lessons and the time I had from my first diagnosis. And it is possible, because I manage that transformation. And so people can move into that more empowered, more educated space. Mm. But sometimes you need a bit of help, don't you, in seeing it. And I definitely had loads of help, from lots of doctors to counseling to amazing charities like yours and other charities. And you do need lots of people to sort of help you and usher you on your way.
Yeah. And that second time then, I mean, you'd already sort of experienced that temporary menopause. And so you were sort of furnished with that knowledge, and you, as well as all this assistance that you had, you already had some idea of what to expect then and could sort of advocate for yourself a little better. How did you prepare yourself for what you knew was going to come ahead then? Was it a case of seeking out this help, as you say, from sort of charities and other places, or were there changes you made to your lifestyle? What kind of ways did you have to adapt yourself?
So by then, I knew that nothing is going to be a singular approach. So when my mental health was really low after my initial treatment had finished, I threw myself into everything that I could control. And I'm not saying that it was right what I did, because sometimes I need to share what perhaps was a little bit extreme. So I threw myself into changing my diet, because I felt, wow, the doctors can't do any more for me. But I was so panicked about a recurrence. And so my whole diet changed from one day to the next. I cut out loads of food groups, and I would never advise or suggest anyone do it. But I needed to cling on to something so desperately, and so I did. My mother-in-law also ushered me to my first yoga class. It was awful. I was in downward dog. I was worried my wig would flip off my head. Oh, I kept going back, because I knew, or some, you know, the rumors say yoga is good for your mental health and all of that. And so I had the exercise and I had the diet there. Now I know, with a lot of talking and a lot of courses I went on, that it was the control cancer took away from me. I could bring that in through my lifestyle. And so I probably didn't need to be as drastic as I was to support my overall health and my long-term health. But diet and exercise became integral parts. And what's great is now I know if you exercise for about 150 minutes a week, they can really reduce your risks of a recurrence. There are great studies supporting that. We also know it's great for your mental health. Now in menopause, I know it's brilliant for my bone health and to support my muscles. So these things tick so many boxes, and I wish they were prescriptive.
Mm.
I wish they had come with my long-term survivorship package. Well, there isn't such a thing, but I wish there was.
Yeah.
Because it felt so empowering, because if anything, it gave me hope. So I know I said mental health and physical health and bones and muscles, but if anything, becoming active gave me hope. And whatever that parcel looks like for someone else, you know, mine included counseling, mine included hypnotherapy, mine included, like I said, diet and exercise, mine included going on a mindfulness course. I really felt I needed to do lots of things to put myself back together. Because initially it felt I was a jigsaw puzzle. Surgery, chemo, radio has taken me apart. And when I was put together but in the wrong way. I didn't fit anymore. I wasn't right. And so all these things made me sort of slot in to a more new Danny version of me. And it helped me rebuild my house and rebuild myself. And it turned out different because so much has happened. And in all those months where I wanted the old Danny back, all I wanted was the old me back. And it took a long time to realize that was never going to happen. And once I realized that was never going to happen, I saw an opportunity, and that opportunity meant that I could become a new version, and I had control in who that version was going to become. And I didn't need to be defined by just cancer or menopause or another life event. And I saw an opportunity, and that was really exciting. That was really hopeful. And in the dark times, if anyone had said to me, you know, there is an opportunity, I would have maybe wanted to punch them in the face. I think that fear, that desperation can manifest in two ways. That's what I know now. Sometimes it can freeze you.
Mm-hmm.
And so if anyone is listening to this thinking, I also feel so scared of my cancer returning or progressing or whatever your big fear is, then it can make you feel really frozen, and that's quite normal.
Mm.
And then it's reaching out to someone who can help you take one step. And something is always better than nothing. If that one step is to eat an extra apple a day over everything else you're eating, then that's a great first step. If that one step is to go on a 5-minute faster walk a week, even if you're feeling really fatigued, then that's a great first step. So whatever those first steps are, we can all do something. And then the other way is to become super active, which I know a lot of people also do. And a lot of it is stabbing in the dark. I have no idea whether what I did was right or wrong. Mm. I can only say what we all do is so differently. But the fact that you do something, I think, is important. Not quite so much what you do, is that we feel active.
Wow. Yeah, it's very clear from where you started off. You really threw yourself into just trying everything you could. And it's clear from that you are such a driven person. But in a way, I guess you being driven still needed that direction. And from what you were saying, I really like that jigsaw analogy as well, of you're still made of the same components, but maybe you've been put together a little bit differently now. And I suppose that leads us quite nicely into talking about Healthy Whole Me, which is now your website that you run, and you support other people that have experienced early menopause through breast cancer, and indeed people that have been through breast cancer treatment and are perhaps struggling with aspects of that. So would you mind telling me a little bit more about that and how you help people?
I started to share because I was so passionate about it. When I changed my diet, I wanted everyone to see how lovely it was and how brilliant it was to eat more plants and how you can cook healthy food for a family. And so I hosted supper clubs from my own kitchen where hundreds, and I kid you not, hundreds of women came to cook with me. It sounds bad now. And I just wanted to create community, to create a room full of women. That was always my passion. And the best thing about supper clubs was we cooked together and then we sat down and we ate together. And for anyone listening who's been to one of those, they'll tell you the magic wasn't in the cooking plant-based foods. The magic was in sitting down and sharing. And I realized that community aspect, getting a bunch of women into a room is amazing. It's magic. I then also started to teach yoga locally. And so I shared that. And then I set up Facebook groups when I was planning for my own menopause. And I realized, gosh, I've actually got quite good care, partly because I've put it together for myself and partly because I was lucky. And the exact opposite is true for the majority of women I speak to out there. Every week, women say to me, I've got my surgery date, I'm going to have surgically onset menopause soon, and there is no aftercare. No one is talking them through what that means for them. That is horrendous when you're in your 20s or 30s or 40s or at any age. How is that even possible? We speak to young people in their 20s who have had no support with their menopausal symptoms. And so I run a project for a charity for women in their 20s and 30s. And it is really quite incredible how little support there is. And it is one of my passion projects, I would say, because I'm so outraged at the lack of support. And I think that support can look differently to different women and different people. One thing that is really important is to figure out what your options are. But that almost needs to become before we're thrown into a treatment. So if we're on, say, a breast cancer treatment, like tamoxifen's sake, so many women are on tamoxifen. You might be on that for 5-10 years. Well, this puts you into a medically induced menopause. So we know that comes with a lot of problems, with a lot of symptoms. They can be debilitating. Who can help us through this? I don't think it's good enough to say, this is a treatment that is really important for you and it can be really hard to manage, but we're not giving you any help. It's like me saying to someone, we know many people are going to have really poor eyesight when they hit their 50s and 60s. We know there are glasses out there, but we're not going to give you those glasses. It doesn't make any sense. We need more help in managing menopause after a cancer diagnosis because it's very different to navigating menopause naturally. So a key differentiation is that your treatment options will differ. Many women are told they can't have HRT because it's not helpful. And at the same time, they need to be given options for what alternatives are out there, because there are, whether they're medical, non-hormonal alternatives, whether they're lifestyle, whether they're cognitive behavior therapy. There are many things. There's a big toolbox we can draw on, and that needs to be discussed. Whether that is surgery, surgically onset menopause, we just need more help and support. Yeah, you can tell by my voice, I'm really wound up at the lack of support, can't you?
I can, but it's a very productive form of being wound up. You know, you're not just sitting there and kind of being grumpy at it. You've really done something incredible with it, and you've gone out there and you've provided a service that you couldn't find before, and I think that's incredible.
And you can only do with what you have. Like, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a menopause specialist, and I don't really mind so much about doctors' opinions, because sometimes they, you know, there are different opinions out there, especially in the menopause space. I'm not really that interested in all of that. The only thing I'm interested in is what this one particular person can do to improve the quality of her life, full stop. And that is picking you up wherever you're at and moving you a little bit closer to where you want to go to. And sometimes that's not even about getting rid of all your symptoms. Sometimes that's just empowering you to maybe put together a really good team of doctors around you. 3/4 of the women I speak to really don't know that they have got access to a menopause specialist on the NHS. It's crazy. With a cancer diagnosis, especially if you're thrown into early menopause, whether that is temporary, surgical, we can have access to a menopause specialist. And the waiting period can be a long time, but that's okay, because often will be, like in my case, you will be in menopause for the rest of my life. And so I should have help to manage that. And I do this in a various of ways. So sometimes it's good, some women just want community, because the menopause, you know, conversation out there is exploding, and it's been brilliant for the last 2 years. You know, we've got celebrities and politicians and documentaries on the menopause. It's great. And at the same time, I get lots of emails from women saying, I feel excluded. Mm. It seems like everyone is jumping on HRT. It's not an option for me. Who talks about people like me? And so by bringing people together into a Facebook community, that's really all that some women need, to feel that there are other people like you in a very similar and very specific situation. Sometimes we go and guide people through whole projects, like I mentioned, for charity, Trekstock. Sometimes people come on a four-month journey with me where I group them into other groups and where we really work out methodically and systematically what you can do to improve how you're feeling. And I know I've mentioned to you before, I then thought all of my work is in different places. I need to bring it into a home. And so I set up the Menopause and Cancer podcast, where I've interviewed like loads of amazing experts. Because again, if you think of what I've just said earlier, my approach is, I don't think we just need to hear from one menopause specialist. Mm. I think we need to hear from lots of specialists, and they have different expertises, maybe from dietitians, from survivors themselves, from people who talk about hormones, and from people who talk about herbal remedies, because I think it's all valid and at the right time can be really helpful.
Mm, definitely. And obviously everything that you're doing here, it sounds like you take a very personalized approach to each and every person, almost as much as you can. I mean, there must be so many people that are coming to you for your services, but it sounds like, yeah, you're really addressing individual needs rather than just saying a sort of blanket, there you go, this is kind of one size fits all, this is what you need to do. And that's fantastic.
What I've realized is everyone's health, wherever people are, they're very specific in how their healthcare works, right? If you're up north in the country, if you're south, it might be a little bit differently. Some people have great GPs. Other people haven't spoken to their GP in a long time. So you need to meet people where they're at. But it's no good in me telling them what they should do. If we enable our community of cancer survivors who are in menopause with a simple strategy of what they can do to help themselves, that is my aim. Mm. Because then we feel we're empowered. If I tell you, do X, Y, and Z, you're going to go through the motions, you might get some help, but that's not an empowered state of being. But if we each create a good healthcare team around us, if we each move into a little bit more exercise, into eating a little bit better, into lowering our stress response where we can, if we then make sure we can access specialists through the NHS wherever we live, perhaps, that is then a sustainable long-term way of feeling better, because these things come and go in waves, don't they? I mean, I eat really well for a week and then I eat really what I don't think is great for another week. But that's okay, because at the end of the day, it's not the one action that will make a difference. It's the continuously dedicating time into my long-term health, whether that is taking medication, going for a run, talking, whatever it might be. It's lots of things that make the difference. Lots of things make a difference. Not one thing alone, I don't think.
Mm. Yeah, of course. And I feel this is completely contradicting what I've just said, and that you sort of are very in tune to people's sort of very personal needs. But if there were going to be some quite broad strokes advice or tips that you could give people, what sort of things would you say to someone who is about to experience menopause, or is perhaps just starting to as a result of treatment?
I would say the first number one key differentiator is to tune out a little bit of the current menopause conversation there is. Hmm. You're different, you have different medical needs, and the blanket sort of advice in the media for women in perimenopause and natural menopause is going to be quite different to you. And sometimes that can be unhelpful if we tune into that all the time. So tune into the people that really know that you are a specialist case, let's put it that way. Mm. The second thing is if you're still under a team, so you might be under an oncologist, but you might just be under a surgeon if you didn't have chemo or radio, if you just had surgery, for example. is to ask whether you can be referred to a menopause specialist. You can ask your GP as well. And if you go onto the British Menopause Society website, they have a finder tool on there. You can put your postcode in and you can be referred to an NHS menopause specialist. Doesn't matter how long the wait is, get yourself on that waiting list. And you can be referred to outside the borough. So if you want to go and get seen at a London hospital, you can do that. It doesn't need to be a specialist near you, but it is more helpful if you have to travel, of course. And then to really review your situation, do you actually know the treatment you're on? Say if you're on aromatase inhibitors or tamoxifen, do you know what the treatment does to you? And even if you're a few years in, maybe you need a doctor to explain to you again exactly what the treatment does to your body. The more understanding that we have, the more we can then sort of deal with the aftermath and sort of maybe look at it in a more compassionate way and think, gosh, I really feel rubbish on this treatment, but I really know why I'm taking it, if that makes sense. Because sometimes we start these things because, like I said, we're on this roller coaster, on this treadmill, and we just do them without really understanding why. But the more we know why, the better we can then deal with it. And then to look at it from a very methodical sort of step-by-step guide, there is no doubt that increasing our exercise levels and by improving perhaps how you eat right now has got health benefits, not just for now and your symptoms, but for our long-term health as well. And so if anyone is just perhaps looking at medication, I think we really need to include lifestyle into the conversation because it's extremely beneficial and we have all the statistics proving it. So it would be foolish to look away, I think. And it is empowering on a daily basis. But then there are many non-hormonal options that women can draw on if they struggle with the symptoms of the menopause. Now, of course, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not best equipped to deal with those. But there's a whole list of non-hormonal medical options, and a menopause specialist will be really well equipped to talk you through those. For some women, hormone replacement therapy will be an option. And then again, it's a conversation that you'll have to have with a specialist. In general, I think general practice is probably not really well equipped to do that because you are a specialist case and the type of cancer needs to be considered, when you were diagnosed, the treatment you're on. There's lots of factors that need to be considered, whether hormone replacement therapy is an option. Patient's choice is really important and the quality of life that you're aiming for is really important. And a lovely doctor, Dr. Philippe Kay, always says, however small, if it bothers you, it must bother your doctor. Mm. And sometimes we feel so grateful that we're here, we've survived cancer, that many women say, and I've definitely felt it myself, we shouldn't be moaning about constantly needing a wee or really itchy skin or losing some more of our hair or a really dry, burning tongue. All symptoms of the menopause. And maybe not life-threatening, of course not, but they can be really debilitating and stopping you in your tracks. And lastly, I would say it's not comparing yourself to anyone else, because if your low sex drive and your dry vagina, for example, is really, really difficult for you, it's important for you to address it. It might be as important for someone else, but it doesn't really matter. Comparison is never helpful because there will always be someone who is better off than you and someone that is worse off than you, right? There'll be people in a worse situation and then there are people who never had cancer, never had a difficult situation. And so it's irrelevant. It's important to work out what are my symptoms. So a menopause symptom checker is a really helpful tool to add. What are my actual symptoms and which ones do I really want to do something about it? And then get help for those. And not worry about what other people might think. If they think your symptoms are worse or bad enough to do something about it, you matter. And I think that's all that matters because you get to live the rest of your life in your gorgeous body. And we deserve to feel well. And it shouldn't just be a byproduct of surviving cancer. Managing menopause is really important and we shouldn't just having to put up with it.
Mm. Thank you so much, Dani. That was incredible. You covered so much there. And I think the only thing that I would add to that is anyone else, you know, if they're listening and they thought that what you just said was helpful, absolutely go to your website, go to healthywholeme.com and find out a bit more about the resources and the conversations that are going on there. And also listen to your podcast, which was Menopause and Cancer. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Menopause and Cancer podcast. Yeah, just says what it does.
Yeah, and absolutely just hear more of what you've got to say, because that was so insightful, and I feel like you've covered so much just in that short 5 minutes there. That was absolutely fantastic, and I think everything that we've spoken about here will really reach and help people, or at least I hope it does. So thank you so much for giving us your time and sharing your insights today. It's been fantastic.
And thank you so much for having me, Em. I often hear from women, they say to me, I feel like we're the forgotten tribe in managing menopause after cancer. And I think by people just talking about it, we feel less alone and a little bit more heard. And that's the whole point of the conversation, isn't it? So thank you.
If you've enjoyed listening to this episode of the Breast Cancer Now podcast, make sure to subscribe via your preferred podcast provider so that you never miss an episode. Also, if you're able to, we'd love it if you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and perhaps recommend us to someone you think would find us helpful. The more people we can reach, the more we can get Breast Cancer Now's vital resources to those who need them.
And I believe you found out later on as well that you had the mutated BRCA1 gene. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And I believe you also found out later on that you had the mutated BRCA1 gene.